This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 7:45 a.m. 45, just turning 46 a.m. on Monday, the 11th of April. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Sharad Kutin and Ibrahim Sani here with me. So Ryanair, guys, had a bit of trouble over the weekend. So last Friday, they decided to halt all operations, and they came to this decision unilaterally. They said it was part of a company restructuring exercise. This was after a pilot strike reportedly forced them to cancel at least three flights. And then Transport Minister Dato' Sri Liao Tiong Lai, he said, look, Ryanair has no authority to suspend its own operations. That, in fact, is a matter that should be left up to the DCA, the Department of Civil Aviation. So here he is, in his own words, explaining the situation.
During which DCA will do and will carry out a full audit on Ryanair. I'm very disappointed with Ryanair for not providing a good services to the rakyat. We have given them a chance. They have actually didn't fulfill the requirement of our regulation. So that's why we are taking up DCA is proposing for a provisional suspension now.
So that was Transport Minister Dato' Sri Liao Tiong Lai explaining the Ryanair situation. Ryanair touted to be Malaysia's first Sharia-compliant airline.
So that's right. So what makes a Sharia-compliant airline, right?
I'd love to know.
Yeah, there are two things here. Number one, on a marketing spiel, what does it mean? Number two, on a regulatory spiel, what does it mean? So let's tackle the regulatory perspective first. In order for a company to be deemed as Sharia-compliant, less than 5% of your revenue must come from non-Sharia-compliant businesses. So if you're selling 100 ringgit worth of food and only 5% comes from non-halal products, your company can be deemed as Sharia compliant.
But so it doesn't have to be completely pure?
No, it doesn't have to be completely pure. But for Ryanair, it's actually on a marketing spiel. What makes Ryanair Sharia compliant is because they don't serve alcohol beverages on board, and that's just about it. Now, if you think about it, even Firefly doesn't serve alcohol on board. Does it mean Firefly now is a Sharia compliant airline? So this whole mantra of them being the first Sharia compliant airline and the marketing spiel that they have been going on, that doesn't necessarily provide traction into how they do business. And this is why Ryanair is in trouble right
now. Okay, so traction would mean that people accept this as Sharia compliant and are attracted by the prospect, right, of being on an airline where, and I believe actually the stewardesses also wear hijab, right?
That's right.
So that's another dimension to it, and it's part of their branding, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the core issue right now is on Ryanair not able to pay salary to their pilots predominantly, but also overall their staff. In fact, I have gotten in touch with one of the Ryanair pilots, and he has confirmed that he has not been paid for the past 3 months.
Okay, so that was the reason for the strike, which then led to the halting of operations. But I mean, overall, are we saying that there is no space in the Malaysian aviation sector for a Sharia-compliant airline, or was this purely operational, the fact that they couldn't get their act together operationally?
Well, what's interesting was one of the things that was floating around was this screenshot of an appeal by the founder of Ryanair to the pilot saying, you know, please come back to work, jobs are at stake, livelihoods and such. And then the response was, I'm not quite sure if this was from a union rep or what, but or the representative of the pilots, but saying, well, you know, you haven't paid us and we've gone hungry all these months. And so, you know, there's obviously a lack of trust that whatever was being demanded, or the plea, as it were, not demanded, but the plea being made by the founder wasn't gaining traction.
So I guess this pulls back to what Melissa was saying just 2 minutes ago. I think this is more of an operational problem. Now, of course, you can have any marketing angle you want, but right now, if you can't even pay your own staff, that's clearly an operational issue.
Yeah, so I definitely think there is a market for a Sharia-compliant airline within the aviation space. Granted, it is a very crowded space, but I think there's a market. However, I mean, who are the management, who's part of the management for Ryanair? Do they have any aviation expertise? You clearly need someone who knows the business to be running this for it to be successful.
That's right. So if you think about going into high risk business, remember that the Securities Commission has created this thing called SPACs, or special purpose asset companies.
Acquisition companies.
And of course, management having the necessary skills and background years in doing that business is extremely crucial. You may have business acumen, but if you don't have that years as your experience, you're not supposed to have this type of businesses up and about.
Okay, did Tony Fernandez have that experience before he got his license?
No, he was in the music industry.
Okay, point well taken.
Well argued.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, but there is, of course, the issue of whether they're competent enough. And I believe the government might have, believed that they could pull it off.
So the difference here between Tony Fernandez is that he has made money, millions of money for the music industry that he was in. He was working for Richard Branson in the UK. So he had history at least building multi-million dollar companies. Dan Maranon also had that history of building a lot of businesses. But for the founders of Ryanair, Ravi Alegendran and his wife, Kartani Govindran, I don't know whether they are, they have that history.
You're arguing you don't need expertise in aviation to run an airline, but you need to have some business acumen or an entrepreneurial spirit of some sort.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I don't know whether I agree with you. However, the CEO of Ryanair has issued a public apology for all the passengers whose holiday plans and business travel plans have been ruined by this halt of operations. But he's pledged that Ryanair will make a comeback soon. So we'll wait and see for that. 7:52 right now, moving on to Cahaya Mata Sarawak. Business Times reports that CMS has set aside 275 million ringgit in capital expenditure this year, and this is to keep its growth on this growth trajectory on track amid what has been an increasingly tough global market environment.
That's right. So Cahaya Mata Sarawak, we've had them on the grill, and you can just head on to bfm.my and download that grill. We've been asking them core questions like, what is the growth potential of Sarawak? How is it that being a financial and construction conglomerate in Sarawak going to improve that state as well as build businesses for themselves? And the idea here is that CMS will be that fuel of growth for Sarawak going forward. And them setting aside $250 million for capital expenditure shows that they are serious in doing this business.
Yeah, so I mean, I think overall it's really kind of important to take a look at what CMS is. I mean, it's a proxy for construction, given the cement. It's a proxy for infrastructure in the state of Sarawak. And this is important to look at, given that we are heading into the election season. But all in all, I mean, its growth has not been without challenges, right? You're talking about the fact that commodity prices have plunged. They, in particular, have been really hit hard by the depreciation in the ringgit, because if you compare them with other cement players in the country, they are very dependent on imported raw materials. So 60% is imported raw materials.
That's right. So because of this, they're going to help fund themselves. We saw news last week that they're going to raise a Sukuk fund. And because of the ringgit fluctuations, they plan to issue this paper in ringgit. So just last week, CMS has announced they will raise 1 billion ringgit Sukuk to fund their growth. And now we know what they're going to do with that 1 billion ringgit. At least a quarter of it will be set aside for capex, and of course the three quarters that they are doing right now is trying to negate that statement that you just made, Melissa, because of the rising operational cost and because of the fact they have to fund these losses. They need money to go forward.
So we're going to have another Sarawak player on the Breakfast Grill today. We've got Eric Kui, the COO of Sarawak Oil Palms Berhad, and Ibrahim, you'll be speaking to him a little bit later.
Yeah, of course. So my question to Eric Kui of COO of Sarawak Oil Palms Berhad is on the effectiveness of doing business in Sarawak. Does he want the same government in Sarawak in order for him to do business well? And I think it is jiving timely because the Sarawak State Assembly is being dissolved as of this morning.
Yeah, I wonder whether businesses, some businesses tend to prefer the status quo because, you know, any kind of changes they might feel is disruptive to their business. Something to explore further on the Breakfast Grill, Ibrahim. Eric Kui, CEO of Sarawak Oil Palms Berhad, will be on then. That's coming up in about 15 minutes or so. Okay, let's take a look at some other business news today. China's government has started buying more Malaysian government securities, and this inflow of new foreign money could raise up to 50 billion yuan, which is about 30 billion ringgit for us, in total. And this is according to the Second International Trade and Industry Minister, Datuk Sri Ongkar Chuan.
Now, of course, this is an exclusive carried forward by The Star. And basically, if China does buy up to 30 billion ringgit worth of our MGS, this would make China own about 8.5% of our Malaysian debt in current MGS market, because we know that MGS is an outstanding value of about 350 billion ringgit. And is it comforting to note whether or not China owns 8% of your debt? I don't know about that.
Well, you know, are we expecting to see more? Because with ringgit strengthening, could we be expecting more demand to flow in?
Absolutely. I think ringgit strengthening is likely to push up demand even further. And we know that Chinese demand in bonds can be insatiable. They have been buying bonds left and right in other countries, in particularly other emerging markets. And if they want to double down their bets on Malaysia, it also makes sense, because a lot of their corporates are already doing business in Malaysia. This includes CREC, CRCC, and their tie-up with Iskandar Waterfront Holdings.
So CREC, CRCC, is that the rail?
The rail company, an engineering company.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of state businesses as well buying stuff. Bauxite, I think, is a big...
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. So it's Chinese state organizations.
So G2G, C2G, G2C, all the alphabets
out
there.
The alphabet soup.
So can we resist, the Chinese juggernaut, at least in those terms? I mean, is this just a natural unfolding of the fact that China is such a major player? Should we, look askance at the fact that they might own up to 8%.
That's right. The way I see it is the market forces come into play, and if they want to buy at the market price, they should. Because if, we can't take a double standard on this. If we are embracing market economy and they are saying that they can fit the market price, they should buy it.
As Julian would say, money has no nationality.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, let's also take a quick look at Alibaba's chairman Jack Ma. He has recently been an investor in China's surging football industry, and now he's hoping to promote yet another English import. This is after signing a development and sponsorship deal with World Rugby. So he's bringing, he's aiming to make rugby a popular sport in China.
Now, I may sound very much like come across a little bit brash or racist, but I cannot imagine, Chinese guys playing rugby.
Why not?
I mean, you have that Maori notion, right? This big, tough, in New Zealand.
If Malaysians can play rugby, why not?
Do we play rugby?
I'm sure there are.
We're not. Do we actually play? Right. I mean, first,
and is it play even, in air quotes?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a national sport. I mean, but I don't know if you.
Well,
it's
okay,
just the big-bodied fellas, right? They're also the small, nimble fellas who also can excel at the game.
The thing is, we play football, and that's our national sport, so-called. We're ranked 170, whatever,
yeah,
right?
So that news came out over the weekend.
Yeah,
didn't
it? Okay, coming back to China, where Jack Ma, through sheer grit and will and vision, can make rugby a popular sport in China. Yeah. For instance, actually, there are a lot of very big Chinese people. So you talk about big, tough people.
The basketball guys, right?
No, well, not just the Wuhu tour, but if you go to the northern parts of China, they're not exactly small people. I think that, in terms of soma type, or in terms of body type, it might be a game for the Chinese as well.
I don't think it's that superficial. I think for Alibaba and Jack Ma, I think the considerations are a lot more commercial than that. I mean, he's trying to be as diverse as possible in terms of trying to gain assets or tie up in almost everything. So, not just e-commerce, but now we're talking about football, which, has potential to be huge. Rugby, which has the potential to be huge. He wants to get a foot in, which is a smart commercial decision.
Absolutely. That much I agree. Jack Ma is always commercially driven.
The question is whether it will pick up, right? I mean, that's the thing.
Okay, we've got news coming up next, but on the other side of the 8 o'clock news bulletin, The Breakfast Grill with Eric Q, the CEO of Sarawak Oil Palms Berhad on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.